This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Good morning and welcome to Medicine on Call. I have a special program today, and one that really intrigues me, and I hope will educate those of us out there who want to go behind all of the hype and the rhetoric that the mainstream media tries to use to pull the wool over our eyes. You know, there's been a lot of debate about medical marijuana and what's going on in Washington State and Colorado with legalizing recreational use. And as a physician, you know, I had a question mark about the fact that this is a drug that is felt to be, or has been, we've been told, is a gateway drug. And the way that it's been hyped by the media, it's not anything about the medicinal side of it. And here in Georgia, there's been a fight that's going on in the legislature. And there's a law that's I don't know if it's been passed yet, Haley's Law. And it's a bill that allows medical marijuana to be ushered in Georgia. So I wanted to now go behind the hype. And I wanted somebody who could really educate us as listeners and me as a host and a physician about what's really going on with medical marijuana. Is it really, will it really change healthcare and the delivery of medical care to folks who have diseases that are treated with drugs that are done used daily and just treat the symptom and not the problem? And I'm really intrigued about changing the medical industrial complex, because that is the thing that's driving healthcare in our system, in our country, in our world right now. And it's never been about helping the patient. Let's be honest. It's about making money. It's about managing diseases so that you can take a pill for the rest of your life every day and be beholden to a corporate entity that's making money on your misery. And I'm tired of that. And I think that our show is all about giving patients, listeners, loved ones, some ammunition so they can stop being a victim of our society and our medical society that's telling you there's something wrong with you, you know, you're not happy enough, you're not skinny enough, you're not pretty enough, and you need a drug to help you or some sort of procedure. So I have Mr. Daniel Macris on today. He's the CEO of Halcyon Organics, which is a company here in Georgia who is on the front line of changing the paradigm. And Mr. Macris, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Oh, thank you for having me. Good to be here.
I'd like for our listeners to get to know a little bit more about you. Tell us, where are you from and how did you get involved with this?
Well, I'm from Atlanta. I was born at Northside in 78, so I've been here for a long time. This is home. I got started in this the same way a lot of people get started with marijuana. It's like we started smoking it in college, just because we were kids and it was something to do. I went to Georgia Tech for a couple years, studied chemical engineering, and didn't really enjoy it as much as I thought that I would, so I graduated from Georgia with a marketing degree, so I did a 180 there. And, as I got older, I kept reading what you're saying is, the hate propaganda against marijuana. And since I always have been kind of a science and chemistry nerd, it just the number, the stuff they said about it versus what I knew about it and versus clinical studies I would read, it never really added up. So I knew somebody was lying somewhere. And, just obviously because there's such a paucity of credible studies saying good things about it up until the last 10 years, there was just you had to do a lot of the research just kind of talking to rogue doctors who had been studying it secretly, and they, and just finding stuff, and you never really knew what publications were credible or, just kind of like that. And then after I went to California in my mid-20s after college and spent a lot of time out there watching it actually help people that were sick and seeing that it wasn't just everybody potheads calling it medical with like a wink, just to give them an excuse to get it.
Well, that's usually what people think of. It's somebody who's sitting on the grass somewhere with their buddies and just, or eating brownies or something. And I mean,
and it exists.
It does.
I mean, if you would, I mean, I guess you could diagnose boredom as a disease, or you know, I mean, or everybody's got a little bit of pain or stress. So, I mean, that's what I think a lot of them do, and that it does exist. There is abuse, but there's also people who legitimately need it.
Well, you know, when I think of medical marijuana, I think of people with cancer who have problems with their appetite, who need, you know, who use the marijuana to stimulate their appetite so they can pick up some weight and help them fight off their disease. But this is bigger than that, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's totally. In 96, when California first did this, it was basically to help with,
cachexia,
wasting syndrome,
uh-huh,
for people with AIDS and cancer. And, you know, everybody knows about the munchies. You smoke some pot, and you get some munchies, you put on some body weight, you eat, good for you. But as the science has really dug into it, we found with just cancer specifically, it does more than just make chemo patients hungry. It actually, when cannabidiol specifically is one of the better ones for CBD, when cancer, it somehow goes through our bodies, and it finds the cancer cells, and it'll individually attack them without hurting other stuff around it like traditional chemo does, and it prevents cancer cells it prevents angiogenesis,
mm-hmm,
which is when they form the blood vessels, which is really, really bad because that's what causes metastasis, and then it prevents the cancer from going metastatic. And then the most exciting thing is when cancer cells are exposed to cannabidiol, it induces apoptosis, which is the pre-programmed death of the cancer cell, that the way it's supposed to die, because like we kill cancer cells in our body every day, like our immune system's programmed to do it for us.
That's exactly right. I believe that we're self-healing if we get out of the way. I mean, there's so many things in our culture and our habits that literally sabotage the body from healing itself, whether that be drinking water with fluoride in it or eating genetically modified foods or being exposed to chemtrails and other heavy metal toxins in our system that enter our system that literally interfere with our restorative or reparative processes. And just to bring down the science of this, when Mr. Makris talks about apoptosis and angiogenesis, what that generally means is that the actual cell, the cancer cell, it self-destructs, it explodes. That's a kill. And that is specific to the cancer cell, but not to the rest of the healthy cells. And that separates this from chemotherapy or radiation, where you take a course of treatment that is non-discriminate. It kills everything in its path, and you literally have to recover. That makes this potentially a treatment that is much more user-friendly, very little side effect associated with it, and it potentially, it doesn't just manage a disease, it destroys it, it kills it, and potentially would change the course of healthcare costs. I mean, the number one thing that kills people these days is some sort of cancer. And if you think about the cost to not only the human being, the individual, but society in general, this could be a game changer. And that's why I think I find that this is going to be one of those uphill battles, because you're going to fight not just doctors, but bigger players like the pharmaceutical industry, hospitals. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a money-making venture, in my opinion. And you have an answer that will undercut it. Do you find that that's something that you're dealing with when you speak out on this?
Not on any of the speaking engagements that I have done, because I have not had a chance to. I've not been interviewed by the board of directors of Pfizer or whoever makes like Avastin, because I know Avastin's like what, $10,000 a month to get.
Right.
So I haven't ever been interviewed by somebody who I'm threatening their money. So everybody I'm talking to is people like you and other news type people that are excited about this, to say, wow, this is better than having your hair fall out. I'm like, yeah, it's a lot better than if hair falling out with chemo is the smallest problem, you know? So I've got a pretty warm reception from everybody, but I haven't gotten into the people who we are cutting into their dividends yet.
Well, they're on the horizon probably, and they're the ones that have the ear of various legislatures. Now, the paradigm is changing. I mean, I've read that, you know, the State Department or the Justice Department, I should say, is not really interfering with states who've decided to incorporate medical marijuana and allow it in their states. So this is like a hands-off approach. And you're saying, I read that there's 20 states already.
21 now. 21. Maryland just did it like a few last week.
Wow. And including Washington, D.C., that actually allow medical marijuana. What do you think here in Georgia is the, I mean, if 21 states plus the, you know, the this Washington, D.C. allows it, what's the holdback here in your opinion? What's the thing that's stopping it?
You know, I think that we're all, it seems like we're always a little bit slower to do things in the South. Maybe it's just, I don't know, if we're just a little, we talk slower, we do everything a little more slowly. I don't know if maybe people had misinterpreted some religious dogma and thought that it was against religions. That's the only thing I could really think of. I mean, we kind of have this whole thing where, I mean, we just were allowed to buy alcohol on Sunday, what, 3-4 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of have this issue down here where it's like self-gratification if it's fun or if it can feel good. I mean, we just got the lottery, what, 10 years ago? I think we're just a little more conservative and just uninformed, maybe. And I think now people are, the message is starting to get through to the masses, which is why it's switching so quickly.
Well, we're going to talk about this more in the break, because I think after the break, because I want people to understand that it's not about getting high. You know, this is a plant. It's a natural means of medication or producing medication that has about 20 different compounds within it. And only one of the compounds is the thing that makes people high. And we're talking about, in some instances, with these treatments, removing that part. So it's not about getting a high. It's about using the medicinal side of the plant in a way that is a medication and one that is natural. And this is what people don't really get. When the pharmaceutical industry creates a medication to treat something, a lot of the times it's based on something natural. They made a synthetic version of it so that they could, you know, copyright it, trademark it, you know, take control of it. I mean, they're trying to do that with vitamin C and vitamin D when these things are all natural. And so this is a potentially, the reason that they don't want this is because you can't take it over. It's natural. Everybody can have access to it. And if you can't somehow make a false, create a false lack or false debt of something, then you can't control the price point of it. It's kind of economics 101 if you really think about it.
Oh, yeah, and I don't want to scare everybody, but there is a way to kind of take control of it, just the same way Monsanto does what they do with their genetics, is you can map the genetics of a good cannabis strain and trademark it. You can't do it in this country, but you could do it in Canada and then transfer the patent in after a few years here. Again, so what? You do that, then you just take that plant and then breed it with another one, and all of a sudden you have brand new genetics. So it'll be impossible for them to patent every single possible strain because you just cross it with something else and you have something new. You know,
that's interesting. Well, on that note, let's take a break, because when we come back, I want to go over these different compounds and talk about the THC versus the CBD, and we'll go into more detail of what the heck that means when we return. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Spring is in the air, literally. So follow Sniffles to Atlanta Center for breathing easy. Weeds, spores, grass, pollen. Airborne allergen levels are through the roof, putting your allergies into overdrive. It's time to follow sniffles.com.
Follow me and breathe easy.
End your annual ritual of taking medication to alleviate facial pressure, facial pain, congestion, and headaches by treating the problem, not the symptom. Balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for. This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day. FollowSniffles.com.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Your severe sinus and nasal symptoms gone once and for all. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again. Call us at 404-591-9100. That's 404-591-9100.
Follow me and breathe easy.
FollowSniffles.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that allergy season in Georgia is year-round? Beginning in July through November, ragweed is the predominant pollen. But February through May, tree pollen causes allergy symptoms. Grass pollen occurs from mid-May through the beginning of July. If you suffer from daily nasal congestion, sneezing, runny nose, headache, ear clogging, or popping, or a chronic cough, these symptoms may be due to allergy and not infection. You should also think of allergies if there is no fever, chills, or colored mucus. Treatment should include nasal salt water sprays over the counter or antihistamines that do not cause drowsiness. If you have persistent headaches, a decrease in your sense of smell, or nosebleeds, you should see an ear, nose, and throat physician. Please join me on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're having an enlightening conversation with Mr. Daniel Makris, the CEO of Halcyon Organics. And we're talking about medical marijuana and breaking down exactly why this is something that, you know, they need to allow in Georgia, and so it can join 21 other states that have become enlightened about the power of this plant. I mean, I'm looking at the studies that are associated with some of the diseases that this actually treats, and I had no idea that it could be used for Alzheimer's disease, dementia, PTSD, epilepsy, multiple sclerosis and cerebral palsy, cancer, diabetes, HIV, osteoporosis. It can be used against the methicillin-resistant staph as an antibiotic, basically. Fibromyalgia, Crohn's disease. It's amazing how many different things. I mean, you just think of cancer and we think of cachexia or just wasting that is associated with having a chronic disease. But these are things that there's drugs for and that the pharmaceutical industry is pushing drugs to be taken every day. And I'm going to talk about one in terms of science, specifically Alzheimer's disease. And some of the drugs that are out there are what we call acetylcholine esterase inhibitors. That means that they actually block a receptor that keeps this neurotransmitter elevated and it's supposed to help you with your memory. Well, one of the constituents of marijuana actually acts as an acetylcholine esterase inhibitor. So it's doing the exact same thing that these pharmaceutical drugs are doing at a fraction of the price. I mean, some of these pills cost $100 a pill. You know, we're talking about prohibitive amounts of money. It'd be different if it were a couple of, you know, bucks, but it's not. And the more devastating the disease is, the more expensive the medication is. There's no reason, in my opinion, for a cancer drug to cost $10,000 a dose. There's no reason for that. I mean, these guys are making hand over fist money, and it's never enough. And they create this false lack. They create this desperate, condition in patients and in doctors where you just feel like you'll do anything to get better. And it's not right. It's just not right at all.
They're playing with your life, people. Yeah. They're like, oh, if you want to live. And you're like, well, I guess I got to come up with the money, right?
Exactly. It's like someone holding a gun to your head, literally. So, it's kind of sad, isn't it?
It is. It's hard. It's a bad laugh. You know, it's kind of one of those uncomfortable laughs when you put it like that.
Yeah. So, you know, tell us a bit about, I mean, I just gave an overview of some of these compounds. I mean, there's 100 different ingredients within a marijuana plant, and my understanding is only one of them is what causes the high.
Yes, that's just the THC, the delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, and that's really only psychotropic after you've removed the carboxylic acid off of it, which is done by heat. That's why you have to smoke it or cook it to get the high off of it. If you just took a bag of marijuana as if you would buy it from the store or drug dealer or whatever and ate it, it wouldn't have any psychoactive effect at all.
So basically, when it's used correctly, it's not a gateway drug because it doesn't create that high or that craving, correct?
That's true. Like, in its botanical state, it's non-psychoactive without you having to do stuff to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, via heat. The gateway drug is a kind of a different, the reason I think that it gets classified as one is because you have to go to a drug dealer to buy it, and they have other drugs, so you're exposed to other stuff. I mean, alcohol is usually the first thing that people get impaired from, but if you go to the liquor store, you don't ever leave with like a bag of cocaine because they don't sell it there. They just sell alcohol, you know?
That's one way to look at it. That's different. Mm-hmm. I like that. Okay. Well, I mean, it's true. It's I guess it's because it's taboo that makes it exciting. You know, I mean, there's something.
Oh, yeah, the forbidden fruit.
Yeah, there's something in the human psyche, especially when you're young, that if your parents say no, then it's got to be a good thing. And
exactly. It's like rebel without a cause.
So look, what about the states that have actually, like, we talk about Washington State and Colorado. The recreational side of this is really hyped there. And I know that it's a huge moneymaker, and I've read that they've made $2 million in tax revenue in the month of January since this thing went on. So potentially this is going to be a big moneymaker.
Yes.
And I understand that in Georgia, we're not trying to make this a recreational, make this legal recreationally. But let's go to those states where this is kind of a two-prong attack, where they're allowing people to do it for social reasons and for medical. How is this, have you seen or heard anything about how it changes the society there? Are we seeing people driving under the influence? Are we seeing more children, you know, start smoking it? What's going on in that you've heard of that?
I actually just got back from the Cannabis Cup in Denver. It was on the weekend of Easter weekend, a 419-420 weekend. We went out to Denver to check out the Cannabis Cup and just see some of our partners and stuff out there that work. I spent a lot of time in California as well. It's one of those things where if you want to go there and find cannabis, it's real easy to do. I mean, the stores are labeled pretty well. Like, you'll see a green cross out front, and possibly a line. But as far as, like, do you see people walking around, like, stoned, and does everywhere smell like pot? Not really. Like, you don't really notice it unless you're looking for it. There are some districts in Denver where they have the industrial places where there's a lot of indoor grows, like warehouses, where sometimes you'll smell it when you're, like, driving around.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just because it's growing. So that could be something that could be criticized. Maybe they should pull those things farther away out into more agriculture things and get them out of the... But other than the basic stuff that you hear about where somebody's in town and they eat more than they eat a bigger cookie than they're supposed to and they freak out, or I think recently some little kids, some responsible parents left their marijuana edibles out somewhere, and their kids took them and ate them and got high, and then I think they had to go to the emergency room because they didn't know what was wrong with them. But again, I don't know if that's the marijuana's fault so much as the parents. I mean, I wouldn't leave a bottle of Oxycontin sitting around my kids either,
mm-hmm.
so, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's about being responsible.
Yeah, and exactly. It's like people have to be responsible. If you abuse anything, it's going to cause problems. It doesn't matter. I mean, if you eat too much sugar or salt, I mean, you're a doctor. You know how good that is for you to eat too much sugar and salt. So, but I haven't seen too many. I mean, obviously there's people who don't like it, there's people who do like it, but I haven't seen society, it didn't start raining frogs, or people didn't all skip going to work or anything.
Well, those are the only two states that allow the recreational side to be legalized, correct? The rest of the states of the 21 are, it's just medical. Am I correct?
Yes. Yes, Washington, Colorado are fully recreational for people that are 21 and over, and the other 19 states have medical programs ranging from California's, which is very, very easy to get a card and to utilize, all the way to somewhere like New Jersey, which is virtually impossible to get a card and find an outlet that's open and will sell you product.
Let's talk about New Jersey, because that's interesting to me. So then, do you have to have cancer in order to get a card there, or do you have to have any of the other diseases that I mentioned, like Alzheimer's or PTSD or epilepsy?
In states that are really strict, like New Jersey, it's the really heavy stuff. It's like you got to have bad cancer,
mm-hmm.
you got to have bad AIDS,
mm-hmm.
You in epilepsy, because that's what's getting a lot of press because of Sanjay Gupta's special with all the little kids with the Dravet syndromes and
mm-hmm.
that. New Jersey's got a sad story because, I don't know, there was like there was a little girl named Sabina Rose that had some really bad intractable epilepsy, and everybody was lobbying the governor, Christie, to allow for kids, because they wouldn't allow edibles in New Jersey for whatever reason. They did not allow medicated edibles. So then he changed the law so that only kids could get them with epilepsy, but when their parents tried to jump through all of the hoops to do it legally, she died before they could actually get her the medicine she needed, because there was too many roadblocks and obstacles for them to navigate to get the product legally.
That's sad. And that's something similar down here with Haley, right?
Haley lives in Colorado now.
Oh, they moved.
Yeah, and last week, I think Wednesday, or the Wednesday of the week before, she had her first seizure-free day from being treated with the Haley's Hope strain. So she went from 100 a day to having her first seizure-free day.
That's amazing.
Oh, yeah, it makes you get goosebumps.
But it's sad that you had to pick up a whole family and move. How many people can actually afford to do that? You know, so you are, for the most part, for the average person who could benefit from this, they're going to be locked out unless their state actually allows it.
Exactly. And, well, in the state, Haley's Hope Act, the HB 885, that almost got through, but it kind of died because of some political fun at the end of the session at the midnight hour, so to speak. That bill, if it were passed, I don't think it would have been implementable, if that's a word, just because they're putting the state of Georgia and several other states are having trouble understanding when, like, cannabis or marijuana, whatever you want to call it, the DEA is scheduled as a Schedule I drug, which puts it in the category with heroin and crack and PCP, like, higher than cocaine. Cocaine's Schedule II. And that Schedule I distinction means that it's got high potential for abuse with no medicinal value, right, and makes it illegal for anybody really to touch. So when the state of Georgia has these plans of letting hospitals deal with it or letting universities do it, that's never going to work, because these institutions receive federal monies, and if they take possession of a Schedule I drug, they risk losing all their federal funding. It's like if you go to Colorado or California, doctors and hospitals and universities don't really handle the product at all because they don't want to lose their federal money. And now the governor's trying to do something where parents can maybe go to Colorado and buy the product and then come back to Georgia and have amnesty from prosecution in Georgia. Mm-hmm. But they're still crossing four or five state lines when they're bringing it back, and each one of those state lines is also a federal crime to cross a line with a Schedule I drug. So if Georgia wants it to work, they have to let us cultivate it and manufacture it and process it and do it all within the state as a private company, or else the federal government will stop it.
Because of it crossing state lines?
The federal government, Eric Holder, has been very clear that we'll let you guys do medical marijuana or recreational marijuana in your state, but you better keep track of where it's all going. You better not let drug dealers and cartels be playing. You better make sure all of your product stays inside of your state and doesn't start getting shipped out to other states that are illegal still. Like, and you better have, like, regulations to make it child-proof and labeled properly and as good as it can be for now.
Well, I think it's definitely, if you're going to do it, you have to do it right. It cannot be half, some half-baked thing.
Perfect.
And, I understand this is a moneymaker on the legal side. We're talking about changing the culture of patients and doctors using this as a medicine, but this has a whole nother history of being illegal and being a huge moneymaker, and people outside of the law, which basically could be put out of business once a state takes this on and starts to be regulated and starts to be put into the grid of the tax system, just like, I guess, alcohol and cigarettes would be. So it's going to be an interesting paradigm shift. And I don't know how long it's going to take, but for people like Haley, people like who actually have life-changing events once they start using this medication, we have to come to terms with this, because there is something that's good about it. We're just going to have to find a line that we draw that's very, 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 that's highlighted so people don't cross it. When we come back, I would just want to talk a little bit more about this versus the pharmaceutical industry, because they're not, this is an interesting argument, and I think people need to start thinking about pharmaceutical industry in a different way. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that chronic nasal congestion, a decreased sense of smell, and asthma can be signs of allergies? Allergies are caused when the body is exposed to things you breathe in or eat that the body does not like. The body's immune system reacts and attacks it, what it perceives to be the enemy, even if it causes no harm, like pet dander or dust. This leads to swelling. In the nose, this causes congestion. In the bowel, it causes stomach bloating and diarrhea. In the lung, it causes shortness of breath and wheezing. And in the skin, it causes hives and itching. The first line of defense against allergy is avoidance. Dustproofing, washing pets, and keeping them out of the bedroom can help with environmental causes. For food allergies, keeping a diary of things eaten and reaction to them is helpful. Allergy testing is less time-consuming and is a safe and effective way to identify allergies. For a complete evaluation, you should see your allergy specialist.
Spring is in the air, literally. So follow Sniffles to Atlanta Center for Breathing Easy. Weeds, spores, grass, pollen. Airborne allergen levels are through the roof, putting your allergies into overdrive. It's time to followsniffles.com.
Follow me and breathe easy.
End your annual ritual of taking medication to alleviate facial pressure, facial pain, congestion, and headaches by treating the problem, not the symptom. Balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for. This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day. Followsniffles.com.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Your severe sinus and nasal symptoms gone once and for all. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again. Call us at 404-591-9100. That's 404-591-9100.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Followsniffles.com.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're talking today about medical marijuana and whether or not it is something that should be allowed to become a choice for treatment for a multitude of diseases. And before the break, I was going to make a point about the pharmaceutical industry. It has become probably one of the biggest money makers in our country, in the world, for that matter. And they seem to drive a lot of the disease processes. I mean, it's if they come up with it with some sort of medication, all of a sudden everybody's got the disease with some sort of acronym. Mm-hmm. You know, there's something called, it's basically a neurological disease process where you either laugh inappropriately or you cry inappropriately, which, of course, everybody potentially could have. And so if basically you're a happy person, you may be put on a drug because something could be wrong with you. And we just seem to negate and forget all of these stories that we hear, whether it be Vioxx with that pain medicine that caused multitude of deaths in our country. I think it killed over, 60,000 people before it was taken off the market. And there's a study in Europe where the beta blockers in non-cardiac patients, they did a study on this, and they found that there were 800,000 unnecessary deaths due to people taking beta blockers for basically inappropriate reasons. It wasn't because they had a cardiac disease, but because the parameters of who falls into the category of needing these things just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And I've had a show several years ago about how the evidence-based medicine, which is driven by the pharmaceutical companies, literally do studies and make or come up with answers or results that mean that more people seem to need the medicines. So before it was, if you had high blood pressure, you had to be over 120 over 80, higher than that. Now if you're 120 over 80, you're pre-hypertensive and you're recommended to be put on a medication. So basically they're taking healthy people at this point, saying that they're unhealthy or pre-disease. And so in order to head it off, you need a medication before you even get the disease. And there are consequences for these. You know, you have kidney disease damage. You have pancreatic problems. You have people who have issues with birth defects. All sorts of things that are outgrowths from taking, you know, legal prescription drugs. And we can't even begin to talk about the people on antidepressants and any anxiety meds who kill each other, kill themselves, shoot up people. And there's consequences in society that we seem to just say, oh, well, it's a prescription drug. It's not. It's okay. It's a drug. And so to have them, and they do this all the time, demonize something that they can't regulate or control or make themselves, and it's the worst thing ever. I think that we should be more open to being aware that there's manipulation that goes on both sides. I'm not the mindset that nobody ever needs a prescription drug. I don't believe that. I think they have a place, and for certain patients, it's perfectly appropriate to prescribe them, but it's overdone now. I mean, over 80% of our population is on some sort of pill. I don't believe that everybody needs to be drugged out of their mind. I just don't. And if there's something, in my opinion, that can treat the disease, to actually cure you instead of manage you, and it doesn't have these side effects, and it is potentially cheaper, and it can be accessed by a majority of people, not just those few who can afford the big bucks, then we should consider that.
I agree.
Now, in terms of your business here in Georgia, you already have a business, correct? I mean, it's just waiting for legislature to catch up with you. Am I right?
Yes, we have it's an LLC, so yes.
And are people able to actually go and get treatment, or how does that work?
I can't do that. We can't do that anymore. We used to actually be able to treat people with non-smokable oral forms of cannabis medicines that we would make, mm-hmm. but now just the exposure that we've gotten has gotten a lot bigger, and we have gotten called by several different legislators and even the man who's in charge of all the police, the commissioner, saying that we better not be doing anything stupid, and they see us as good guys, and they want us to stay that way, so they've asked us to stop our civil disobedience campaigns.
So with the Haley's Hope law, has it been passed yet, or is it still in – it's supposed to be passed by the Senate next, right, the state Senate?
The session's over, and it was passed by the Senate, but they had attached one of the senators attached the unautism bill to it, mm-hmm. and when they sent it back to the House to get approved on the last day of the session, the House sent it back with the Haley's Hope, but not with the autism bill that the other lady wanted, and then it got, she didn't bring it to a vote, and the clock ran out on it, so it died.
Is it going to be brought up in the next session?
I am confident that we are going to hear a lot about this next year.
Okay. And when it's passed, that opens, that allows you to start being open and actually doing what you're supposed to do, correct?
Yes, and that's what we're real excited. Right now what we're doing is we're looking at some, we're partnering up with some organic gardens where we're going ahead and getting hydroponic facilities, indoor greenhouses and hydroponic facilities set up where we're producing organic kale and lettuce and spinach and stuff and mm-hmm. selling them to the local restaurants. But mm-hmm. So we have the infrastructure as far as the lights and the hydroponics and the ventilation and, you know, all the infrastructure to start cultivating immediately.
Well, talk to me about the different ways that this can be delivered. Everybody talks about or thinks about smoking it, and that's what everybody's kind of been socialized to believe. But there's different ways to deliver this, correct?
Yes, there are. You can deliver it almost in the way of any other kind of medication. You can eat it in the form of either foods or in pills or in oils. Like you can do lollipops just like they do with cancer kids. Mm-hmm. There is also delivery vehicles involving, we can infuse alcohol bases and vegetable glycerin bases, which we can have sublingual tinctures and drinks. You can create topicals, so where you can like rub it on your skin. And for some skin conditions and stuff like psoriasis, arthritis and stuff like that, that's a very effective way, obviously, is using lotions. And if you're dealing with heavy nausea, it, like, you can even do suppository. You can put it in a pill and make a suppository form.
Wow, that's amazing. And this is a question I'm sure people are going to ask. If you do use this in a medicinal form or in that standard, what happens for drug testing if you have to go to, if you're starting a new job, if you're going to, if you're an athlete, any of these other things, how would that affect you?
If cannabis is a banned substance, you will test positive and you will have to deal with the consequences of it.
So carrying a medical card won't, it will save you or won't?
Oh, no, it won't. That's getting challenged, but so far the courts have upheld the employer's right to deny people from working or anything if they test positive for cannabis with a card even.
See, that's interesting, because the way that the medical cannabis is structured, most of them aren't going to have any of the THC in them, correct? So there's no high associated with it. It's just having those metabolites in your urine or bloodstream, correct?
Right. Well, there is. It depends. Okay, if you're dealing with low THC or zero THC products, mm-hmm. then it would depend on how strict the drug test is, whether or not it's looking specifically for the THC metabolites or it's just looking for any cannabinoid. So cheaper drug tests won't show up unless there's THC. The more fancy ones will show other cannabinoids,
okay.
like even CBD.
So we'd actually have to have a major education about the difference between recreational and medical marijuana in terms of how that would affect you from an economic or, you know, athletic or, you know, societal standpoint, because it's not that simple. So any idea what goes on in Washington State or Colorado? Has there been any talk about how that's affected people getting jobs there, anything like that?
I have not heard very, very much. I have heard of people, like I said, where if you test positive and you have a zero tolerance drug test at your job, you get in trouble regardless. Again, because it's legal now, even for 21-year-olds recreationally, mm-hmm. it's starting, the debate, it's starting to get some legs underneath it.
I think it would have to, especially if it's on the recreational side. If it's legal, it's like cigarettes, I would suppose, or alcohol.
Yeah.
If it's legal and you have it in your system and they have a zero tolerance, then you'd still have the same issue as if you were smoking or ingesting
marijuana.
Right.
Well, you have a good example of that is Brandon Browner, the old cornerback of the Seattle Seahawks. He tested positive for cannabis a couple times and effectively got kicked off the team and had to miss the Super Bowl. And he lives in Seattle, where if you're over 21, you can recreationally use marijuana. And with him, it's a double whammy because with all the evidence we're seeing as far as the anti-inflammatory properties, mm-hmm. cannabidiol is 100 times of a more potent anti-inflammatory than ibuprofen is, and it doesn't do the heart damage that other NSAIDs do. And also it helps clear off the tau proteins from repeated head injuries, and we're finding strong evidence that it can prevent the chronic traumatic encephalopathy, the CTE that's causing these NFL players to commit suicide. So to tell these NFL players they can't do it when it's a far superior alternative to getting hooked on Vicodin and then committing suicide, you know, it's just, it's kind of sad the way they're doing this to people.
Well, that's pretty interesting. And I actually saw a story about not only the, you know, the depression side of this, but the Toradol. It's another NSAID, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, and it kills kidneys. So there are people who are NFL guys and people who are into sports who are having kidney damage, and sometimes irreversibly because they're taking so much of this. I mean, they inject this. It's one of the anti-inflammatories that you get after playing. And just think the difference in quality of life and longevity if you were to allow something like the cannabis versus the Toradol or the other, or Advil or Motrin, which all potentially can affect your kidney.
I think Vioxx was an NSAID, wasn't it?
It is. I'm sorry, it was. And there's still some of them out there that they still allow through. I mean, again, everything is a controlled poison, so just because it's allowed and just because it's over the counter doesn't mean it's actually safe. And that's where people need to be educated. A lot of times something natural is not as toxic for whatever reason. And we can go over that a little bit more when we come back from the break. Let's take a break again. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Spring is in the air, literally. So follow Sniffles to Atlanta Center for breathing easy. Weeds, spores, grass, pollen. Airborne allergen levels are through the roof, putting your allergies into overdrive. It's time to followsniffles.com.
Follow me and breathe easy.
End your annual ritual of taking medication to alleviate facial pressure, facial pain, congestion, and headaches by treating the problem, not the symptom. Balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for. This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day. Followsniffles.com.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Your severe sinus and nasal symptoms gone once and for all. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again. Call us at 404-591-9100. That's 404-591-9100.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Followsniffles.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
And we've lost in like both Iraq wars and Afghanistan combined.
Oh, you mean in terms of people committing suicide?
Yeah. Suicide in the veterans is really bad.
Yeah, I'm just having a conversation with my producer, and the amount of medications that a lot of the soldiers are put on for things like depression and PTSD potentially make the situation worse. I mean, there's chemical changes. There are interactions, drug-to-drug interactions that literally kind of produce some of these side effects.
And they load them up with crazy strong stuff, with SSRIs, SNRIs, benzos, TCAs.
Yeah.
I mean, they load these poor guys up and girls up with drugs that if you gave them to a normal human, you would go crazy.
That's true. I mean, you're taking medicines to stay awake, medicines to go to sleep, medicines to make you eat. It's a lot of drugs. And if it could be streamlined and their systems could be cleaned and reset, I think that would make a difference. I mean, not only the soldiers, but everybody. I mean, if you think about how many children are on ADD, right, that's speed, basically.
Yeah, it's dextroamphetamine with amphetamine salts. It's lab-grade meth.
And the more you take, the more you basically can have a side effect where you become paranoid, you start hallucinating, you wonder why there's more violence. I mean, it's some of it may be drug-induced. I mean, you have to ask yourself these questions. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, there weren't this many drugs floating around. I mean, legal drugs floating around in people's systems. I don't think that it's not appropriate. I mean, if we were getting better from it, that'd be one thing, but people are getting sicker. That's the problem.
Yeah, and it's not even that they're just legal. It's that doctors and commercials push them and make you think you need them and mm-hmm. encourage use. It's not just that they're available, but they're pushed like the dope man.
That's true. I can't say that I disagree with that. And if you have a problem, take a pill for it. You know, as physicians, we're guilty of doing that as well, instead of talking about it, instead of talking it out, instead of, you know, figuring out what the problem is. It's about
instant
treating
gratification.
The problem. Well, it's been indoctrinated, so it's societal. You know, if you have a problem, there's an easy fix for it. You don't have to work for it. You don't have to fix the problem. You don't have to do the due diligence. You just take a pill and it's all gone. And that's not what we should be doing as physicians. And I think patients need to expect more. That's one of the things that I think that the medical marijuana industry, if it can get off the ground here, and I think it should, would make a difference. If you're not on something that you're going to need for the rest of your life, for example, you know, if you could treat your cancer and not end up in, you know, getting another cancer from the side effect of the radiation that you took to treat the first round of cancer that you had, maybe that would make a difference. You know, we'd spend a lot less money in the medical industrial complex. People, this is all a domino effect. People talk about the cost of medical care, but a lot of it is not the doctor, but the medications that people have to take or are prescribed. And if we could streamline that, bring the cost down, have an alternative that's natural, and it, you know, it doesn't have to be for everybody, but for certain patients, it works. It's not, it should not be a one size fits all. That's what I'm saying. It should be choice. And as long as, and let's go over this, because people think that you're just advocating, and I've heard you interviewed, and it's all about just the high. But what you're arguing is actually a regulation, correct? You want this to be regulated so it's not accessible to everybody.
Right, right. Just like any other, just like any other drug. I mean, there's, every drug is regulated at some capacity, and I think this just needs to be treated like any other medication. You can't just go buy penicillin if you've got a rash, you know.
So you're not advocating everybody and their mom getting access to this. This is about a controlled access for people who medically need it, and it'll be given for treatment to either cure or either alleviate somebody's medical condition. So it's not going to be one of these recreational things where everybody and their mom can just, you know, go to a store and buy
something. No, that's not what we're fighting for in Georgia or in the South at all, because, I mean, there's other people that are going to do the recreational side of it. We want to stick with medicine because it's just, personally, I think it's more fascinating. It's, you know, so I enjoy the science and the biochemistry behind it. So that's, I mean, maybe I'm being selfish, but, yeah, we're just for medical.
Well, I don't think you're being selfish at all, and I think this is what... This is what medicine's supposed to be about. It's supposed to be about curing somebody, you know, helping them, not just warehousing them and putting them on a drug to shut them up and make them take something every day just to manage a disease. Management doesn't work. Management costs lives, it costs money, and it's not efficient. And we talk a lot of this new healthcare system about prevention and how, you know, the tenets of Obamacare are supposed to allow people to get preventative testing, et cetera. It doesn't talk about cure. It doesn't really talk about prevention in the classic sense. And it doesn't open the door to holistic, real, cheaper avenues of medical delivery. If it did, then I think that we'd be, more states would be allowed to have this conversation and not be... not have the powers that be, medical powers that be, block them.
Right. And what when you were mentioning earlier in the show today about whether cannabis is natural, and there's a lot of natural compounds that are, you know, that we don't want to eat, or, you know, there's mushrooms that'll kill you. What's extra fascinating about the way cannabis, because when you read off the list of Alzheimer's, epilepsy, cancer, it can sound almost like we're dealing with snake oil. You're like, how can this one thing do so much? And what makes it even better than it's just natural is that our bodies, all mammalian bodies, and even some invertebrate, I mean some vertebrae like fish and snakes and reptiles, they have endocannabinoid systems inside of us where we have this a bunch of different nerve receptors, like there's CB1s and CB2s and TRPVs and the GPRs, that we have endogenous cannabinoid ligands like anandamide. So when we say that it can treat osteoporosis and it can treat epilepsy, it's because of the different macro cannabinoids within the plant. For instance, the THCV is something that agonizes and antagonizes our CB1 and CB2 receptors that promote bone metabolism, healthy bone metabolism, as opposed to the THC and the CBD, which have anti-convulsant, anti-spasmodic properties, which is what helps epilepsy or like neuropathic pain from inflammation. So we have these systems, and new science is showing that there's a clinical endocannabinoid deficiency syndrome that is finding that they speculate it's a pathogenesis of depression, schizophrenia, MS, Parkinson's, vertigo, Alzheimer's, migraines, IBS, all sorts of crazy stuff.
So what you're saying then is that you're using a natural pathway. You're turning on a natural pathway or stimulating a natural pathway that either heals somebody, treats the deficiency, actually treats the problem in a
it makes
cellular
your body
way.
It triggers your immune system, or it, yes, you activate existing receptors in our body and tell them to do stuff like they're supposed to do.
Right.
So we're not actually putting like a drug in you that does anything. We put a drug in you that goes to the receptors in your body. Like you said, our bodies are amazing healing machines, and our immune systems are fascinating if you can understand how the words that they use to describe it. But what this does is it boosts those natural mechanisms, so it tells our bodies, like, hey, you need to start making more bone. So, and it does it the natural way. It doesn't actually go into our bone and do stuff. It goes to the receptors. It turns them on or turns them off, which causes our body's natural system to do what it does.
Let's look at it from a pharmaceutical standpoint just for a second. What you just described is what things like these osteoporosis treatment, what the doctors prescribe, or taking something like Nexium for heartburn. It actually has a side effect where it inhibits magnesium, and it leaches calcium from the bone itself. So it actually has an opposite effect because it's not working on a natural receptor using the natural pathway. It's what we call exogenous, right? It's something that's created to do something, but it has an untoward effect that you need another medicine to try to fix. That's what makes this so powerful. And let's be clear, everything that you're saying is actually, it's been looked at from a scientific standpoint, and there are research articles that actually bear out what you're saying. And if people go to your website, halcyonorganics.com, they'll actually be able to look at these journal articles. So don't listen to us. Go and read for yourself and learn, because that's what this is about. If you don't know that there are choices out there, you cannot actually make a rational decision. You're just doing what you're told to do. And I think everybody should have a stake in the game. And in order for you to be a good patient to actually protect yourself, you have to have some knowledge base. I'm looking at one of a pie chart on your website that's awesome, because it tells you what each of these metabolites are and what they do. So CBC, for example, inhibits cancer cell growth, promotes bone growth, reduces inflammation, relieves pain. Imagine taking that versus something else that makes you sleepy, like for fibromyalgia. I mean, this is like a no-brainer to me. It's kind of easy to see how this
and
works.
And none of these chemicals are toxic. We have not been able to found any toxicity in any of them at any kind of human dose. Like, we have found toxicity if you consume, like, 5 pounds of concentrated oil at once. But other than, I mean, you can't do that. You would throw up. But none of these things are shown to be toxic or addictive.
No, that's what this is about. So, Mr. Makris, tell us how we can reach you.
You can contact us through halcyonorganics.com. Just fill out one of the contact forms. You can call our office at 770-676-1798 and shoot us a call or an email. We are getting a lot more calls than we expected this early in the year, so bear with us if we don't get back to you like right away. And really at this point, just email your legislator and tell them that I believe that people should have access to medical cannabis. That's really, they do what we say, ultimately. Pharmaceutical companies have a lot of money, but we're the ones who vote. So we just gotta vote. You know, it sounds cliche, but
that's the answer. On that note, I want to thank you for being a guest. I enjoyed it, and I learned a lot, and I hope my listeners did too. And I hope they contact you. And I look forward to my listeners coming back next week for Medicine on Call.
Thank you.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.